Well, hello everybody, and welcome back to Power Core 360 Volley Talk. Today we are going to be talking about power hitting and effortless power hitting. So how you can hit the ball harder, but with less effort, basically, is what we're going to be talking about today. So if you have any questions about how to hit the ball harder, make sure to drop them in the chat, and we will be sure to get to those questions today. But otherwise, we are going to hop right in and introduce ourselves today. So I am Darian, and then this is Billy Glisten, our regular co-host for this podcast / live stream. And yeah, Billy, if you want to introduce yourself, feel free.
Yeah, Billy Glisten, Power Core 360 founder, undergrad in coaching, master's in exercise science, an exercise physiologist, and a strength conditioning coach.
And also the brains behind Power Core 360 as well. So all of the videos that you guys see every single day, all of that different mechanics and everything we preach on there comes from Billy's brain. So I know a lot of you guys like that stuff. And so this is the person it comes from. So a lot of good things we can learn from Billy here. And I'm really excited to dive into today's topic. I think you guys will be able to learn a lot of information on how to hit the ball harder. So we're just going to jump right into it right away today. We will be answering different social questions at the end and then any other questions you guys have as well. And we'll also answer throughout if it pertains to what we are talking about. So feel free to drop questions in the chat. Tell us where you're listening in from. We'd love to hear where you guys are listening in from. So all those things. And first, we're just going to start out with Billy. How did you come up with the term effortless power?
Yeah, it was interesting because in addition to volleyball, I've been training a lot of rotational sports, football quarterbacks, baseball, softball hitters, major league pitchers. And I worked with a guy that played in the major leagues for 16 years. His name is Damien Easley, played for the Mets for 16 years. And he was getting some equipment. I was doing some training with him. He owns a baseball facility in Arizona. And when I was taking him through the training, he's a hitter. And he's like, Billy, this is what I used to feel like when I was playing in the bigs. And he used the term effortless power. That's the first time I kind of remember. But he said, like, when I'm in the equipment, I'm in the bands, I take the bands off and I swing, I feel the effortless power I used to feel, you know, when I was in the big leagues. That's where I started. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard golfers, baseball players especially, talking about the word effortless power. So probably 6, 7, 8, 10 years ago, we trademarked it. It made so much sense for what we're doing with the training, with the system. You know, we just jumped on it and said, this is something we want to go with. So that's where it started.
Yeah, that's super interesting. So like Billy said, he did coach a lot of pro athletes and still has throughout his career a lot. So a lot of good athletes have been working with Billy, and that's a really good opportunity, obviously, like I said earlier, to learn from somebody who's worked with some of the best athletes, right? For all the kids listening in, this is a great opportunity for you to be able to advance your volleyball career and get to the next level of playing just by listening and absorbing the information that we have here for you today. So Billy, another question I have for you is, so you get this effortless power, but what about the Power Core 360 training and equipment methods create the effortless power that you're talking about?
Well, I think it first comes off before you can use training and methodology. It helps to have some understanding of the body and advanced sports training principles. And essentially, if you look at every sport, pretty much with the exception of volleyball, any rotational sport that throws or hits a ball overhand, so a tennis player hitting a serve, a smash, a javelin athlete, right, throwing a javelin, a football quarterback, a baseball pitcher, right? All of them use very similar mechanics. They take a step, they turn their hips, they turn their shoulders or their chest, and then their arm gets whipped through. The arm's very active, but it gets additional power from the legs, the body mass, the turn of the hips, turn of the chest, and the arm. So understanding that, essentially what happens is this. You look at the body and you know, what we teach basically is whole body rotation. And once again, I wish we would have come up with the science. We didn't, but we're kind of the communicators, right? We're spreading the word to athletes, especially the volleyball athletes, to say, look, if you'll actually take a step, if you'll actually turn your hips, turn your chest, and use your arm, you're going to hit the ball much harder. So that's what we do with the system, the equipment, our training methodology, is we teach young athletes, especially in the volleyball world, hitters who are coming in, and coaches, and not so much trainers, but coaches are telling them just swing your arm at it, right? And it just doesn't make any physiological or anatomical sense because, you know, it's like this. If you look at every other sport, they're stepping, they're turning their bodies as we're describing. It's like driving a Corvette. They're like driving a Corvette with 500 horsepower. They're using the strength and the forces in their legs, their hips, their butt, their chest, their abdominal muscles, their back, their arm, and their shoulders all together. All you add up, all the forces being created by that movement when you rotate and hit, man, that's a lot of force. That's a lot of arm speed, a lot of ball speed. Unfortunately, what's going on in volleyball, unlike the other sports, is that a lot of them are just being told to swing your arm at it. Well, put your hand and arm on your shoulder, and there's not a lot of big muscles around the arm, chest, and shoulders. So it's like driving a, hitting with just your arm solely is like driving a Volkswagen Super Beetle, 75, 80 horse. So there's certainly some power and some torque there, but nothing compared to what the other athletes do in the other sports who are creating this extraordinary power because basically they're using almost their entire body to just swing in a way that it creates much more power, much more arm speed, ball speed, and at the same time puts a lot less stress on the shoulder of the hitting arm or throwing arm because you're using all these muscles versus just swinging your arm at it. And we sometimes with young athletes, we talk about the arm being like the fly swatter. They're just taking a fly swatter at it. We want them to use their entire body. You immediately hit the ball harder and your shoulder immediately feels better. And long term, your shoulder will tolerate that motion and those movements much better.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to give some context here for the listeners that maybe don't know what equipment we use in order to train athletes. So could you just give some context for maybe the viewers that don't know or people Sure. that are listening in that don't know?
Yeah. So a couple of things we developed, and we first started with a hip harness, a hip trainer, right? Goes around your hips and pelvis. And in every rotational sport in the world, golf, baseball, hockey, lacrosse, you name it, the turn of the hips is a key power source. And mechanically, if you would, it's one of the first sources of power in the body. And in terms of sequence, it needs to turn first. So we tell athletes and we teach and train athletes, put a hip harness on, we use resistance bands, it hooks up to the hip harness. And a couple things happen, depending on how we connect the bands, it will actually pull the hips and rotate the hips through. And so the athlete versus us trying to tell them how to turn their hips, they immediately feel the motion, right? And then when you pull the bands off, depending on how you use the bands, just like Damian from, you know, the Major League Baseball player, when you take the bands off and you've activated those muscles that turn the hips and pelvis, they kind of just turn on their own. It accelerates the learning process. The athlete immediately feels like, oh, that's what I do. And when the hips turn fast, that turns the shoulders and that swings the arm through, and immediately the athlete usually turns around. You've seen it in the clinics. They turn around with a big smile on their face. They don't even really know what they're experiencing, but they know their arm's moving faster. They know the ball's coming off their hand and arm faster. They're more athletic. It's more dynamic instead of just, once again, swinging their arm at it. So the hip harness is where we started. A few years later, you know, I was just looking at the science and looking at rotational athletes. We were training and saying, well, yeah, the hip turn is important, but so is the turn of the chest and shoulders. So then I developed a torso harness that goes on the rib cage. We do the same thing there. We use bands that hook to the hip harness. So we're turning the hip, we're turning the torso. That strengthens the rotational muscles of the spine and the core. And you take the turn of the hip and turn of the shoulders. Now that's your entire core creating, using all those muscles around your hips, pelvis, and spine and shoulders to basically turn faster. That ends up whipping the arm through. So the arm gets aided or assisted by the turn of these big muscles around the hips, pelvis, and spine. The final part of it is in the what we call the full body training system. Then, of course, when you're swinging or hitting something overhead, then we have arm cuffs, a cuff that goes above the elbow, a cuff that goes above the wrist. We have resistance bands that go on that, too. So we are basically teaching the feel of the hip turn, the shoulder turn, the arm swing in very specific ways. The bands help the athlete immediately feel the proper movements and the proper improper movements, right? Or I should say it this way. The correct and incorrect movements, both are important in terms of a way to accelerate their learning. It's about speeding up the learning process. The system, the pull of the rubber bands on the harnesses and on the cuffs allows the athletes to feel that. And then when we go into a strength and conditioning mode, we put resistance against the turn of the hips, turn of the shoulders, or maybe elbow action and arm action as you go into the swing. Man, you take those bands off and your hips will fly through, your shoulders will fly through, your arm will fly through. because you're immediately just turning on the muscles. And those muscles, when you take the bands off, will be on for 20 or 30 minutes. And that's what athletes feel. Athletes that have played, you know, in pro sports before, and they get in the harness, and that's when they're saying, this just feels so good. It feels like the effortless power I used to experience.
Yeah, and you're talking a lot about athletes being able to feel. And I want to just point out a video that we just posted to all of our socials. I think it was yesterday, but it's one of our other PowerCore 360 coaches, Jim Murray, asking kids at the clinic, what did you feel? What did you feel? Tell me what you felt when you took the band off. And you can see some kids say, yeah, I felt like my hips were turning faster and I was hitting the ball harder once I took the bands off right after doing it with the band. So if you want to check that video out, that kind of explains also what Billy is talking about here in a way where you can feel the difference right when you take off this equipment. So it's something that's really cool, and a lot of athletes can feel that. And it's something that's really important when you're a volleyball player, because in order to get better, you're going to have to be able to feel what your body is doing and kind of self-correct eventually, right? Like, we all want to get to that point where you're not looking at your coach and being like, coach, what do I got to do to get the ball and hit it harder? You want to be able to feel what you're doing and be like, yes, I need to turn my hips. I need to whatever, load different, whatever you need to do to hit the ball harder. You want to be able to self-recognize that. And I think this equipment can really help you with that. But with that being said, younger athletes, I know a lot of you guys are like, I just want to hit the ball harder. I want to get kills. I want to get more playing time. I just want to, you know, be a better volleyball player. Maybe you want to play at the next level, all these things. So I want to ask Billy here a question. What about youth players nowadays compared to maybe before with volleyball growing and everything? Why is it important for them to be able to hit the ball harder?
Well, simply stated, I mean, you want to make a coach happy. You want more playing time. You want to make a better team. Figure out what coaches want. Coaches want points, right? Points allow them to get wins. So it's scoring, right? And that's ultimately what you need to do. If you're not playing, if you're not making teams, you know, and you're a hitter, and or trying to serve, you're not scoring. If you're scoring, you're in the game, you're in the match, right? So hitting the ball harder dramatically increases your chance of scoring a point, winning matches, making your coach happy, right? And it doesn't matter if you're talking about middle school, high school, grade school, club, or college coach. That's ultimately the name of the game, score points.
Yeah, definitely. And I know you talked about this earlier, but you can kind of compare it to a Corvette versus maybe a Volkswagen, I think is what the car maybe that you chose to use, and how just being able to up your performance game in this can kind of, if you want to compare it, that's what this equipment and this training, it makes you Corvette level. But let's talk about maybe if there are any other benefits of hitting the ball harder besides just getting more playing time and, you know, scoring points, all those fun things.
Well, sure. I mean, for most athletes, they start when they're young kids. It's about fun. And, you know, it's fun to score points. If you're an athlete and you don't like to hit the ball hard and the feeling it gives you to score a point, to, you know, to get a kill, then I'm not sure why you're playing that game. But one is just fun. Of course, in the big picture, a lot of parents look at this and they understand the relationship to trying to get to college on a college scholarship. It's about scholarship money, right? And once again, it's the same animal. You're going to get a college coach's attention if you can score. The first money and the most money in the Division I level in female volleyball in the U.S. goes to outside hitters. Why? Because outside hitters have the most to do with scoring points and probably winning matches. So once again, from a performance standpoint, if you can hit the ball harder, you're going to score more points, you'll be happier. You got a better chance of getting to college and getting some scholarship money, right? And at the same time, what we really haven't said, there's a couple other things, but one of the other benefits is the injury side. So many, we've talked about this in previous episodes, so many athletes, you are one of those athletes, one is a Division I scholarship hitter. You go there, the volume changes so much. If you use certain mechanics at the high school or club level, you can get away with it at a young age. And you're using, whether you're just using your arm, you know, oftentimes that's the case. They're taught this high elbow thing. They use it in their setup. And it's easy to teach. Kids can go hit and they can have some success with that. But the mechanics of that are really wearing on the shoulder and sometimes, oftentimes, on the back. But the point is, it can be so stressful on the shoulder. if we change the mechanics, if we get to whole body rotation, create this effortless power, then the athlete's not only going to hit the ball harder, score more points, but they're going to have a shoulder, a back that's going to tolerate their season in club and high school and college. And as you know, you were hurt your first year in Division I from the mechanics you used when you were in high school or club, probably not a problem, but you get to the volume that happens, the number of swings, the intensity, the lack of recovery, and you're just training so much longer throughout the year, there's no recovery. So that stress on the shoulder starts to really pay a toll. So it's important to talk about injury prevention as well.
Yeah, and like you said, I just want to give everybody a little bit of context. So I play Division I volleyball at the University of North Dakota. I got recruited there, like Billy said, to be an outside hitter. Started my freshman year, had a lot of fun. Obviously was like a dream, right, to play college volleyball at the next level. But then unfortunately, like Billy also mentioned, you do a lot, not unfortunately, but you just like, the name of the game is you're going to do a lot more reps in college. And if you don't have the proper mechanics, it's very hard for your body once you get to that level. I mean, I wasn't even the first one of my teammates in my class to have career ending injuries, which is crazy. Not that mine was career ending, but it definitely ended my career for hitting for after my freshman year, I moved to libero because of my shoulder pain and not being able to sustain a full season of hitting. And so that's just some context there of, I had other teammates of landing on one foot, whether they tore something in their hips or knees or anything like that, that also could not play after only one season. So it's not something that's uncommon in the volleyball world, which I think is honestly very sad because of the amount of studies and everything that's out there for throwing and baseball and any other sports. And I think volleyball can really learn from that. So I think that's something that I know we'll talk about later, but just so you guys have some context from coming from a college player that has played at a Division I level, I know that a lot of you guys maybe have dreams to do that, or maybe your kids have dreams to do that. You just want to make sure that they're able to sustain it and then not have to be in pain where you're laying in bed and can't sleep on your right shoulder at night because it hurts when you're 23 still. So like me, if that makes sense. So that's just, I mean, what we're talking about is really serious. And if you don't take it serious now, you're going to feel it after your life ends, because there's always a life after sports, and it might not be the best on your body. It might take a few years for your body to recover. So just some things to maybe note for any parents or volleyball players out there. But so hey, Darian, what you're saying, yeah.
Can we go back to the effortless power? Because we kind of talked about the muscle piece, but I think one of the things I want to interject is sometimes in sports, and especially on the guy's side, right? You can watch an athlete, and I'm going to use golf as an example for a second. You can watch a long drive golfer, right? And they're hitting the ball crazy distances. In 2012, I trained the world champion, Ryan Winther, who won the World Long Drive Championship. He was a big dude, 230, 240, big, strong guy, spending a lot of time in the weight room. And yeah, he could hit the time. He had the greatest club head speed, hit the furthest ball in the world, right, in terms of golf. What happened, though, when you watched his swing, I can take you and compare him to a guy, and this is golf, but bear with me for a second. I promise I'm going to make this relevant to volleyball. You can look at some golfers these days, a guy by the name of Justin Thomas, right? And he's maybe, I don't know, 5'10", 5'11". He's not a big guy, 160, 170 pounds. But he hits the ball as far as some of the biggest guys in the golf world. But why? It's not because he's muscling it. Certainly does strength and conditioning. Certainly knows how to turn. There's a lot of, he's doing very similar things. He's turning his hips, turning his shoulders. The arm and clubs are coming through with speed. But there's something else that I want to give, that gives, provides some light to what we call this effortless power. And there's a tissue in the body that's very elastic. And so muscles do their work, but I want to get away from thinking that whether it's a male or female athlete, that we're just trying to muscle the ball. Certainly we want to be strong and all that. But there's a tissue called fascia. And fascia, if you can imagine, this sounds a little grotesque, but it's just the anatomy, right? If you've had anatomy, you understand this. If you took the skin off, underneath the skin is this sheath of fascia, this tissue that's very elastic, and it goes from tip of your head down to the tip of your toes. It kind of holds the muscles in place, but it's very elastic. And what happens is, if you're teaching whole body rotation, so for us, if we're talking about a hitter, a right-handed hitter, say, let's say hitting the left side, they do their approach, we teach them to go in the air and we tell them to open their chest to the right sideline. As they're opening their chest, not only are the muscles are creating the forces to open the chest, but as that chest turns to the right, there are this fascia, this elastic tissue on top of the muscles is getting stretched. And just like a rubber band or a slingshot, if you pull on a slingshot and let it go, when you pull on the sling, the rubber tissue, it creates what's called potential energy, right? When you let the band or the sling go, that rubber, that elasticity in the rubber goes the other direction. That's what this fascia is like. And here's why this is important. Now let's get into the volleyball world. Let's say you're going to a big event, a qualifier, or it's AAUs or JOs or some national tournament at the end of the year, a 3 or 4 day event, right? You want to be a good hitter, not only in the first match, but you, if you're just trying to muscle it, it's very difficult to make it through 3 games or your wave and do that 3 or 4 days in a row, right? And go through all the matches. You got to be able to not only be strong, have endurance, but you got to learn how to use the elastic tissues in the body. When you use the elastic tissues in the body, that's where really the effortless power comes from. And everybody's probably had, you know, my sport's golf, you guys, your sport is volleyball athletes. You've had that swing where it was like, oh my God, that felt so easy and so good. You weren't muscling it. You were using some muscle strength to maybe open up and then turn your hips and close. But what was really happening was you were stretching on some of this elastic tissue, this fascia. And when you stretched and then you triggered by turning your hips or kicking your feet, here came your chest, here came your arm, and it was like this really cool feeling, right? You need to be able to be smart when you train. You're not trying to muscle it through a 3 or 4 day event. You won't last, right? What you need to be able to do is, it's energy efficient. If I learn how to load and move my body in certain fashions by rotating to the right and then turning back to the left, when I do that, I'm stretching into these elastic tissues. And these elastic tissues don't cause my muscles really any work, right? Once I've opened up, this elastic tissue, the fascia, is shortening and pulling the arm and everything too with all kinds of power, speed to get that point, get that score. And it's happening, saving you energy. So you're not quite as tired at the end of the match, end of the day, into the tournament. In other words, you're going in maybe that gold medal round, you need to be able to perform, right? Now you've really got to score the points. You're playing against the best of the best. You better still have it at the end of the match. So it's not just how strong you can get. I'm a strength coach. Strength's important, but it's really super specialized strength you've got to do rotationally to be able to not only make the muscles of the chest, the core, the back, the hips, the butt strong, but to learn how to load into a way that you're using these elastic tissues where you can hit the ball with effortless power. I know that's a lot, but it's really important for the higher level athletes, the high school, the higher level club kids, and then certainly the college and pro athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. So important. But can you explain maybe to the people that don't know exactly how or what this effortless power maybe looks like while they're hitting? Can you explain how they're supposed to go through those motions?
Yeah, it's hard to do here because I'm trying to explain it, but I'll do my best. And I'll just give you some of the mechanics for effortless power whole body rotation we teach. Left side hitter, right-handed hitter hitting left side. We teach them to go up in the air. They're facing their right antenna when they take off. We teach them to turn the center of their chest to the right sideline in the air. Belly button still pointing at the right antenna. So there's a stretch between the turn of your chest, turn of your hips. That means your abdominal muscles and back muscles rotation are getting stretched and loaded. And guess what? That fascia is starting to stretch, right? In the air then, as you know, we teach what we call the reverse power C. The athlete, you'll see it, you go look at TJ DeFalco, Matt Anderson, or other athletes like that off the Men's USA team, you'll see them, every time they hit, they look like this. Their legs are bent up behind them, right? Their knees are bent, their thighs are straight, their chest is turned open to the right sideline, their belly button's facing the right antenna. Their arm comes down underneath the shoulder line, and they're opening up to the right sideline. That's how they get loaded in the air. That's what we call the setup position. Then to unload, or what the terminology we use, we call that turning to the right sideline is opening. In simple terms, the way we close is we teach them to kick their feet, turn their belly button from right antenna to left fast. And then now that releases all this stretch in the fascia, that elastic tissues, the abdominal muscles, the core muscles, the chest, the shoulder, the deltoids, the rotator cuff, the tricep, all those muscles are firing in sequence, in order, if you would, if you do it correctly. That's where the effortless power comes from. What you're going to see with just a normal person's eye watching it is like, oh, that looks easy, right? The better the athlete is in any sport, in this case, volleyball, the really good hitters almost look like you can hear the ball coming off their hand. You can see it coming off, but it looks like, oh, they're not even trying hardly because they've trained it and trained it and trained it, and they've made the right muscle strong, and they've learned how to stretch and get into that elastic tissue to make it more effortless, if that makes sense. So that's as best as I can try to do with words to try to explain it. And go back to the point you were talking about earlier, it's feel. The fastest and best way for the athletes to learn how to do these movements is to maybe quickly see a video or a picture of it, but then the way we train it, we take them on the court, we put them in the systems, right? We let them feel the movements. What's it feel like to open your chest, to use the right muscles, to stretch that tissue, not only across their core, across their thigh, across their hips, across the chest, across the shoulder, especially young athletes. They have no understanding of, beyond just swinging my arm at it, how am I supposed to do it? So long story made short, teaching them how to feel the correct and incorrect movements is really key to trying to speed the learning process for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And I want to bring up a comment that we actually received on Facebook or Instagram the other day. And it was, how I'm sure you guys have like studies that back up these claims. Otherwise, how are you making these claims that volleyball players should be using these mechanics? So maybe let's dive into kind of that can of worms on the science side, if you want to touch on that.
Sure. I mean, it's once again, it's not anything we've come up with. We're teaching the science I learned in grad school 40 years ago, right? You can look up things like, look up terms like stretch shortening cycle. That's a strength and conditioning term, stretch shortening cycle. It's also known as the myotatic reflex if you get anatomy and physiology books. That's what we're trying to do. And this is super technical. I'm going to keep it simple. The stretch across from your pelvis to your rib cage, across your chest, in your rotator cuff, in your deltoids, on the front side, all these muscles, even the tricep as it goes up, right? That's creating a stretch shortening cycle in all these muscles. Then it becomes automatic. Then the nervous system, the brain makes all these muscles fire with more force, more speed, more power right now without any conscious thought, right? We didn't create that science. Go look it up. It's out there. You'll find it all over the place. It was in an anatomy and physiology book I read by, I think it's Guyton, G-U-Y-T-O-N. That's the anatomy and physiology book I had in grad school 40, 50 years ago, right? So it's out there. We didn't create it. What we're doing now is applying it into volleyball, right? Because a lot of the other sports, baseball, golf, volleyball, shot put, discus, tennis, they know it. They've been using it for a long time. The secret's out, right? We're trying to take what's really not a secret. It's just science. It's not research. It's science of how the body works and how it moves. And so if you don't understand it, reach out to us. We're happy to give you the terms to go look for. And the more a person knows about the anatomy, the physiology, the anatomy of the shoulder, the spine, the hips, the pelvis, the more they're going to understand like, oh, the guys aren't making this up. They're just explaining how it works in terms of how do you create movement? How do you create speed? How do you create power? So on and so forth.
Yeah, definitely. It's very interesting to think about why volleyball teaches a certain way compared to other sports when all this science is out there proving other ways that are healthier for your body to do this. So would you say that volleyball is kind of like in the dark here compared to other sports, or why is that the volleyball is so different?
Yeah, you know, I didn't grow up playing volleyball, so I don't know where it started. But yeah, I would tell you it feels like it and seems like that it's kind of stuck in the dark ages, and there's a lot of sports science that's out there. Once again, we didn't create it. We're just the message, you know, people. We're just trying to spread the word and say, here's how the body works. Here's how you train. This is advanced training that other sports are doing. Why don't we take this and apply this into the volleyball world? This is the better biomechanics. So the initial part of this question, go talk to a biomechanist, go talk to a physical therapist, go talk to an orthopedic surgeon, go talk to a strength conditioning coach. And they're going to be able to start teaching you and telling you how the shoulder works. How do you load? How do you develop power, speed, you know? And so understanding the body and getting with people that are experts in those fields, I think is important. I think sometimes people just they look and say, it's not there. That's your opinion. No, it's not our opinion. We're just telling you what the science is. And if you go understand the anatomy, the physiology, and sports, advanced sports training concepts and principles, you're going to see, oh, that's what they're talking about. And you'll find all kinds of references for it in terms of overspeed and underspeed and all these things that we've been doing for 20 or 25 years in other sports, for baseball, arm speed, bat speed, all these things. And volleyball, we're just now bringing it into the volleyball world, saying, you know, that was my question. Why is everybody stuck back in a lot of these thoughts that really don't hold any weight science-wise?
Yes, very interesting concept to think about. But hopefully people, you guys can learn from us here at PowerCore 360. Like Billy said, we just want to spread this message and really truly help athletes hit the ball harder, but also do it in a way that's safe for their bodies. So I want to circle back. I know earlier we talked about the training equipment that we use to in order to create this effortless power that we're talking about. Can you talk a little bit more about how it does create that effortless power? I know we talked about taking it on and off, but what other things can you do with this equipment that creates that power?
Well, think of it now from a strength conditioning perspective. Once again, we talked about hooking a band up to the hip harness, torso harness, or the cuffs. The athlete can feel that, correct and incorrect movements. You change the bands, and now you're actually doing resistance training, right? It's just like going resistance. Rubber resistance is one type of resistance. You can go in the gym, you can do bicep curls. You're using dumbbells. The resistance is the weight, it's the load. You can use free weight, you can use a dumbbell, a kettlebell. They're all good sources of resistance or load. That's what resistance bands do. Here's a big key feature that when we started doing this, even in the baseball world, a lot of athletes were going into the gym and they're trying to work on rotational speed for bat speed or as a pitcher for arm speed, same thing in volleyball. And what they're doing is doing vertical exercises, right? They're doing squats, doing lunges, RDLs, all the common stuff, which are really good if we're doing vertical jump, right? We're trying to push up off the ground and jump high. But in a lot of these movements, we're talking about rotation. What I realized was 15 or 20 years ago, there's not really great equipment in the weight rooms, especially at the time, that are actually providing resistance for the hips, resistance for the spine or the shoulders to turn in what we call the transverse plane, right? Where you're turning from side to side. All the equipment, if you think about it now, you go getting a piece of equipment and you push the arms up and down, you're working vertically. We need to work rotationally, right, in this transverse plane. So that's where I first started 20 years ago, building up the first hip harness, like, okay, I was working with the kid who at the time was the state champ, and I think she's still the state record holder for shot and discus in Colorado. She went to Arizona State and was number one in Arizona State Division I, right? She was so good in high school, like, how am I going to make her better, right? And so I started just really getting into the mechanics of rotation, like, how am I going to teach her to turn her hips faster? Because that turn of the hips will turn her shoulders, and then the shot, the discus, the hammer, whatever she's throwing, is coming through faster as well. The reality is the equipment then, when we put it on, we use resistance bands on the hip, on the torso, on the arms to create resistance and create strength rotationally, right? And so once again, if you go into most weight rooms, there's not a lot of great equipment. 20 years ago, there was no equipment. There was a med ball, right? But there was maybe a cable machine. And the problem with some of the cable machines is, or just a band by itself, I can do this with my arm. But if you look at my chest right now, my chest isn't moving. What I figured out was we needed a harness because the band was being hooked to the wrong part of the body. We were trying to create rotational forces for the hips, the pelvis, the core, but the problem was the load was in the hand. That's when I designed the first hip harness and said, look, I'm going to take a rubber resistance band, hook it to the pelvis because I need the load on this at this time. Her name was Sarah Stevens. I need to get Sarah this load on Sarah's hips, right? I don't need it in her arm. We can do that with all kinds of stuff. I need her hips to turn faster. I need her spine and shoulders to turn faster. So we just started playing with the harnesses, and so that's what the harnesses do. They put resistance or load on the muscles around the hips, the pelvis, the spine, or the arm and shoulder, and now we go through the exact specific movements of the swing, right? We're not hoping by going in the gym and saying, okay, let's do some bench press, right, where we're pushing two arms at a time, the body's not rotating. Does it make my chest stronger? Yes, but that's a different movement, even different muscle fibers in the chest and shoulder that are getting strengthened doing a bench press versus now what we do is we put a torso harness on, hip harness, arm cuff on, and man, they're going through the movements of the actual arm swing in the same sequence, the same firing patterns. We are training the specific muscles of the body to get stronger. In our opinion, to make it simple, we say that we're strengthening the arm swing movement or the rotation of the body. We get away from thinking tricep, bicep, deltoid. And as athletes, we train movements versus muscles. We want to train the hitting movement. We can do that really nicely and really quickly using bands, and especially for young athletes, right? Who are 13, 14, 15, maybe have never done any strength training, you know, so we can put light resistance bands on them. And from day one, we can teach them the mechanics, the feel of the proper movement. And at the same time, they're already starting to build strength and stability in their pelvis, their spine, their shoulder, their rotator cuff, their arm. And that's why when you take the band off immediately, like 3 minutes later, when you take the bands off, actually 30 seconds after you take the bands off, the arms flying through, the chest and shoulders are turning because the body is responding to that resistance. And you take it off and they're immediately starting to feel the proper mechanics.
Yeah, I want to clarify. I love all of that. I want to clarify one thing with the equipment as well. Billy, can you dive in a little bit more on, yes, we do a lot of core and spine stuff, but what else do we have for the equipment, if you can tell everybody?
Sure. So, you know, the bands we've kind of blown through, there's a cuff that goes on the above the elbow and above the wrist. Now we really get into the shoulder. The arm's important. It is about arm swing. But it's not about arm swing swinging by itself. It's the turn of the body and the arm and shoulder working together. So we use the lighter resistance bands with an arm cuff on the wrist, arm cuff above the elbow, and now we're strengthening the muscles, the rotator cuff muscles around the shoulder, the pec major, the big muscle in front of the chest, super important, right? To hit the ball harder. Anterior delt, internal external rotators of the shoulders, the rotator cuff once again. All those muscles need strength. They need stability, they need endurance, and then once we have the base, then they need power and speed later, right? So the whole body, our what we call the full body training system, trains a volleyball athlete to help them turn their hips, turn their chest, turn their shoulders, swing the arm through, swing harder, hit harder, create effortless power, and protect the shoulder, the back, the hips and spine in the process.
Yeah, and we got a question on Instagram, so I think this will be something good for us to touch on from everywhere, YouTube, Facebook, everything. The question is the equipment used at the PowerCore 360 clinics needed after, or is it just used at the clinics and then it's like it just helps them feel the movement and then they go from there?
I mean,
kind of dive into that.
Yeah, very good. Yes, it's used at the clinic and then they need to leave the clinic and they have a program they need to follow. It's like anything, you're learning the proper movements, but when you're at the clinic or when you're doing a lesson and you're somebody using our equipment, it's in the forefront of your mind. You're thinking because you can feel the movements, you're thinking through the movement. You got to go build muscle memory. You got to do thousands and thousands of reps. And once again, the benefit of using the system is you're feeling and performing the right movements. So you're building the muscle memory to create the right swing, the right turn of the hips, right swing of the arms, so on and so forth. But at the same time, because we're doing it with resistance on, right, they're actually getting stronger in the muscles of their chest, their shoulder, the core, their hips, their spine. They're getting stronger and they're building muscle memory at the same time, right? That's not what typically happens when you go in the weight room, right? You go in the weight room and you're doing bench press, RDL, squats, lunges, whatever. You're getting stronger, but more than likely that has nothing to do with the mechanics you're using unless you're really jumping, right? What we're doing is we're building the strength, mechanics, technique, skills, and strength and conditioning, power, speed, all at the same time, if that makes sense. So yes, they have to take the equipment home. They have to use it at least 2 to 3 times per week. And they've got to do it for weeks or months to have any prayer of starting building muscle memory. Otherwise, they're just thinking about, right? I'm thinking about how to swing. Well, you know, when you go in the air, and the ball goes up and the ball's moving, the ball starts taking over the brain. The brain's going to start adjusting to what do I need to do to time the ball and hit the ball. You got to build a muscle memory on the ground, in the bands, in the exercises, in the harnesses, and then you've got to start working on transitioning into the air and taking that strength and conditioning and movements into the air. That takes, unfortunately, that takes times, reps, and here's the real key, focus.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to go back to strength. I know you touched on strength there. So I know one thing that a lot of young athletes are told, if they want to hit the ball harder, get in the gym, start lifting really heavy weights. Can you touch on just, I know we can do a, probably a full episode on this, but can we just touch on why we wouldn't want to do that?
Yeah, cool. Let's go back to the bench press. That's probably the best example. If you think about you're sitting on the flat bench, right? You're laying back and you're doing a bench press, dumbbells, whatever you're pushing up, bar doesn't matter. You got two arms working at once. And in this case, my chest, my pec muscles, anterior shoulder muscles, right? Delts are pushing and triceps are pushing the bar forward, right? But the rest of my body isn't turning. So I'm getting some strength and conditioning, but these days people talk about patterns, right? Movement patterns. This movement pattern is a push pattern with both arms. If I want to get better, if I'm an offensive lineman in football and I need to be able to push a defender off me, then that's a great exercise. My feet are in the ground and I'm pushing that guy off, right? But that looks nothing like the volleyball movement with one arm where I need to rotate and bring my arm down. Some of the same muscles are being worked, but they're not being worked in the same pattern, the same sequence. The brain needs to be very specific with it, right? I mean, let me just ask you this way. If I had a golfer that wanted to learn to hit the ball harder, would I tell them to go in the weight room and spend all their time doing bench press? No, I wouldn't. Because you'd say, well, that looks nothing like a golf swing. Of course it doesn't. It's not a golf swing. If you do bench press and you do it three times a week with increasing loads, you're going to get stronger at a bench press movement. That's the pattern you get stronger at. If you want to hit a volleyball harder and you want to rotate your body and do all these specific movements, you better be training those specific movements. And more importantly now, training the muscles in the sequence with loads in the same direction, same action, same movement that you want the athlete to do perform when they hit. That's what we do in the harnesses. That's why some people have said to us, like, oh, it's unbelievable what you figured out. We did figure that out, that you could actually create movement, create the technique, and teach the technique and get stronger at the same time. It's very efficient, right? And for young athletes especially, some of the muscles we're working, like rotator cuff in the shoulder, they don't take a lot more load than bands. I mean, you might be able, I've worked with major league pitchers, and maybe they're moving 30s or 35s, maybe a 40-pound dumbbell, right, as they're doing internal external shoulder rotation. That's an 18, 20, 24-year-old man, right, being able to do that. If we're talking about a 12, 13, or 14-year-old young athlete, male or female, the bands, that's why we use them. We can start doing some basic strength and stability, teaching the technique, teaching the mechanics, and be able to do that in a very safe way for them. And yet now it carries over. As soon as you take that off, as you know, we go into either throwing exercises or hitting exercises, and immediately they're reinforcing the movements that we want them to learn to hit a ball in the ground, in the air, on a tack swing, whatever the case is.
Yeah, so as kind of like a roundup of this topic of effortless power hitting, I really want you guys to have some key takeaways to take away from this before we hop into social questions. Billy, if you want to kind of give them maybe like three or four pointers of what are things they need to know for effortless power hitting.
Yeah, just number one, turn your whole body, right? And even if the mechanics aren't perfect, and I don't care if your elbow's above your head or down below your feet, if your hips turn first, and then that's going to turn your chest and shoulders, your arm's going to get whipped through. And no matter what arm slot your arm's in, you're going to hit the ball immediately harder, right? Take a step, turn your hips, right? Good things will happen in your swing. Of course, you can refine it and make it better down the road, but turn your body. And then, because there's not a lot of great strength and conditioning exercises in most gyms and most athletes, young athletes don't know how to do it, you know, use resistance and train your body to be stronger at turning and rotating. Most of the equipment in the gym you go to is vertical. It's up and down, right? Push and pull, overhead, lower, you know, but there's not a lot of rotational stuff, good rotational stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was some great information today. I hope you guys learned a lot. I want to dive into some social questions at the end of each episode. Every week we answer questions that we receive on all of our social medias. So if you have any questions for us, make sure to comment them on this or any of our videos. We will make sure to try and get around to answering all of your guys' questions you have for us, because I know we get a lot every day. So the first social question we have today, which if you listen to this, you should know the answer to this, but I just want to make sure that we reiterate exactly this question. So it's how to reduce shoulder pain when hitting. That's a question I know we receive all the time. So if you wanted really short, maybe one or two sentences, kind of sum that up, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, turn your body once again. If all you're using is your arm and shoulder, and you're wondering why your arm and shoulder works, because that's all you're using. Here's the quick, fast analogy. Take a metal coat hanger, bend it over and over. What happens? It gets warm, it gets hot, right? Exactly where it's bending. If your shoulder gets hot, if it hurts, then you wonder why it hurts. More than likely, that's what you're using. That's all where the power is being generated from. If you now turn your entire body, all those forces get spread off. Your arm and shoulder is still working, but it's working with the abs, the back muscles, the butt muscles, the core muscles. That's how you swing and make shoulder pain go away. Another episode, we'll talk sometime about what we call scapular load or scap load, right? Once again, it's something we took from the baseball world, but it's a technique that we use with what the shoulder blade should be doing to connect to the thorax, the rib cage. We see 4 mile an hour increases in ball speed with pitchers when we do it. We see the same thing with volleyball athletes. Of course, we teach that in our master class, and it's highly technical, but it allows an athlete to immediately hit harder and save the wear and tear and pain on their shoulders. But short answer, rotate your body, right? Take the stress and spread it out across the body, get it off where it's not so isolated just on your shoulder.
Awesome. All right, another question that we have, and this one I do see a lot because, you know, volleyball coaches and players, all they have heard is load your elbow high, right? Like load your elbow high if you want to hit the ball high and over the net. So this comment that we received on Instagram was, if you want to hit the ball into the net, then you should load with a low slash neutral elbow. And that was a response to a video where we were teaching kids how to properly load for a safe position for their shoulders. So can we kind of dive into this comment that we received? I know it's not maybe a question, but I just want to address it.
Yeah, and actually it's a good comment, or it's a good, I'm going to give a good response to it. We beat up the high elbow because the high elbow, and hear this clearly, the high elbow in the setup, because the young athletes are just being taught to raise your arm up initially and quickly. The elbow goes up above the shoulder. That creates the pain, the impingement, a lot of the issues on the shoulder that they have. That's a high elbow, but that's what we call the setup. That's before you've got up in the air, you've opened up and done all that. That's what they're doing early in the swing sequence, if that makes sense. Okay, listen to this. We actually teach a high elbow, but we don't teach high elbow early in the setup. We want the elbow to come up high as one of the last parts of the swing movement, right? So as you know, we talk to the athletes, we talk about Shaquille O'Neal, right? And we say, imagine you're giving Shaq a high five. I want you to open your chest to the right sideline, turn your hips, turn your chest, and then the elbow is going to come up next to your ear before you give Shaq a high five. The elbow is coming up high, right? We do want the elbow to come up high. For those of you that can watch me right now, but you'll notice what's happened. Look at my shoulders. My right shoulder is higher than my left. My arm, now that I'm in the high elbow position, I've rotated, and my arms and shoulder joints still in a really good position to generate and tolerate the torque on the shoulder. But my elbow is coming up high, but look at the position of my shoulder. Now, I'm going to go back for those of you that can see this later, maybe in the YouTube side of this, right? The high elbow and the setup. My elbow comes up above my shoulder. There's the impingement. My elbow becomes above my shoulder. When we teach athletes how to rotate, what ends up happening is then as they rotate through the ball, yeah, look at this line. The elbow's coming up. It's high elbow. My hand's going to come up, snap through the ball. I can hit it off the back wall if I want to, right? The ball's going over the net, and it's the same thing any other professional sport movement does, throwing or hitting the ball. The elbow comes up. The hand comes up. If I'm doing tennis, then the racket head comes up, right? In this case, it's the same thing in volleyball. Elbow comes up, hand goes through the ball, powers through the ball, then the arm comes down. It is a high elbow, but it's high elbow at the end of the sequence when the shoulder and body are in a good position, the body's rotated, it's created all this great power from all the body, all the muscles, right? Versus putting the shoulder in a bad position early in the setup. That's what we're trying to avoid, right? We're just trying to put the body in a position where it can generate and tolerate torque, rotation around your shoulder, around your spine, or really any other joint.
Yeah, so hopefully that kind of clears up any sort of confusion we have with the high elbow and where it comes in the sequence and if it comes at all or everything any questions you guys have like that. And I know that's always kind of maybe something that's a little bit to digest. It takes a while to really understand that. So we will for sure be talking more about that in the future. Our last social question of the day is, if you turn your entire body and use your entire body to hit the ball, you can only swing on the left side of the court. Is this true or not?
Yeah, untrue. Rotation, so let's think of it this way. The rotation of the body creates whole body rotation, whole body torque, whole body power, if you would, right? It creates a big amount of force to get the arm swinging. The hand is what directs the ball direction, right? So I can turn and I can hit a line shot, deep one, right? And I can turn my body, elbow comes up, I get on top of the ball, I come down through the ball, my hand goes right down to the one zone, falling through the ball, I'm gonna hit that ball hard because I'm using the power from the rotation of the body and I'm adding my arm to it. The hand directs, the hand's like the steering wheel, it's directing that ball where to go, okay? But you can hit a deep five ball, you can hit a cut shot to the four in the front, you know, in the front row, and I'm still rotating my body because that's a big power generator, but now my swing and my arm action might be hitting the left side of the ball. If I'm hitting left side, trying to hit a deep five ball, I'm hitting the left side of the ball and I'm pushing that ball over to the deep right corner, or I'm hitting a four, a cut shot, right, to the front row over here. But look, my body's still turning. I'm still using the rotational power from my body. My arm's still coming through, but now my hand and arm mechanics are a little bit different. My hand and arm's not going to the one zone, right? It's going to the five zone or to the four zone, right? So that's, you're using both technique, power, rotation from the body, and have to understand how the hand and arm have to work and create direction on the ball.
Yeah, and something that we can definitely dive into a lot further if you guys want. So if you have more questions on that subject and you are a little bit confused on how to do that, please leave some comments below and we'll be sure to answer those in the future episodes. We got a comment saying, love this on Instagram. So thank you guys for the support tonight. This was an amazing episode of Volley Talk. We will be back every single Wednesday for the most part. Next week, we will be live streaming on Thursday. Just so you guys know, it will be one day late, but usually it is Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Mountain Time. So that way you guys can catch us every week if you're interested, but it will also be saved to all platforms. And if you would rather just listen to this rather than watching the video, you can listen to it on Apple Podcasts and Spotify as well. But if you do want to watch the full video, it will be saved to both Instagram and YouTube for you to watch after this and go back and revisit any information that you thought you may have missed or want to listen to again. So thank you guys again for the great episode tonight. It was so fun talking with you guys. And Billy, I think you gave us some great information today. So thank you for that. And we will catch you guys next Wednesday. So make sure to, that's all the questions that we got today. So, sorry, we got one question left that just came in. Does a lot of what is done for volleyball translate to racket sports like tennis and badminton? Can you touch upon differences?
Yeah, quickly. I mean, tennis, look at a serve. And so Andy Roddick, I did at ABCA, American Volleyball Coaches Association, Jim Murray and I probably in 2010 did this presentation, Extraordinary, How Do Extraordinary Athletes Create Extraordinary Power. Andy Roddick was one of the pictures. I showed Serena Williams. I showed different athletes, Tiger Woods, but I used Andy Roddick. Andy Roddick at the time, and as far as I know, still is, has the highest velocity recording as professional tennis player, right? He used to hit the ball 150 miles an hour on some of his serves. That's smoking, right? So to create that rotational power, the mechanics in tennis and the mechanics we teach hitting an overhead smash or a serve in tennis are almost identical to what we teach in volleyball. The body positions, the bend of the leg, the rotation of the body, right? Elbow going up, high elbow at the end of the sequence, the hand coming up, the racket head coming up, body's rotating, right? It's very similar. So yes, it does. It relates to racket sports immensely. And once again, tennis has been doing this for a long time. Now we're trying to get the volleyball athletes to take the same thing. And in fact, if you've been around me and Jim Moran, some of these, we've used tennis rackets and other things to teach the motion, to teach arm speed and other things where the athlete learns how to get the elbow up first and then take the hand and then the racket head up. That's the right sequence for the arm motion as they go up into what we would call that Shaq high five position. But anyway, that's probably way too deep for now, but the short answer is yes, totally relates.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for answering that last question for us today. But like I said, next week will be Thursday at 4 p.m. Mountain Time. So make sure to tune in for another episode of Volley Talk and make sure to leave us any questions for either social questions next week or any topics you want us to touch on in the future. So Billy, thank you for all the information today. You were great as always. And I look forward to seeing you all next week.
Awesome. Thanks. Bye, everybody.